Okay, thank you, Chair Summerford. With your concurrence, we are beginning the Metro Access Subcommittee meeting today on Monday, November 17th, 2025. As you just heard, this meeting is being recorded, and the meeting audio will be placed on our website, which is wmata.com. So, with that, I just want to share a few helpful tips. Reminding everyone that if you are calling from a cell phone, or excuse me, from a phone, and you'd like to unmute yourself, you can press star six. And if you press star six, that will mute you again. If you would like to make comments, you can virtually raise or lower hands by pressing star nine. And if anybody who's joined through the video conference, if you'd like to speak, make comments, you can unmute yourself by clicking on the speaker icon. It says mute or unmute. And if you'd like to make comments, you can click on the raise hand icon. That will raise or lower your virtual hands. I request everyone to use these tools if you're able to, because then it allows us to have one speaker at a time, and it also eliminates any external noise when people stay on and they're not speaking. So thank you in advance for following these courtesy processes. Just another reminder that we do have two American Sign Language interpreters with us on this call. Therefore, when anybody makes any comment, please state your name, because it helps the interpreters in doing their job well. It's helpful for people who are listening on the phone calls, and when people listen to the meeting audio, it's helpful for them as well. We also ask for anyone who makes comments to please describe yourself briefly when initially speaking. For instance, I'm an Asian Indian. I'm wearing reading glasses. I have long dark hair, and I'm wearing a gray colored sweater today. We do have guest speakers today. So if you're using any presentation, we would request for you to please describe your slides or any presentation if you have in detail. And that's for the convenience of our members or any members of the public who are either blind or have low vision. Chair Summerford, with your concurrence, I can read the agenda out loud, and then I can go to AAC roll call.
Sure.
Okay, thank you. So before I start reading the agenda, I will share my screen. And when the agenda is visible on the screen, if somebody can confirm, I will appreciate that.
I
I see.
see the agenda.
Thank you. So as soon as I finish reading the agenda, we will go to AAC roll call. And afterwards, the committee will go through the review and approval of today's agenda and prior meeting minutes. Then we will go to the reports, which includes commendations, customer service, and outreach, if any. We will have Ryan Traher from Transit. He's a transit analyst from Washington Suburban Transit Commission, to give an update about Metro Access Strategy Study. And the next topic of discussion is Metro Access Eligibility Recertification Process Policy. And Chris Colbert, Director of Eligibility Certification, will discuss that. And the last topic for the day is by Sarah Rod and committee members. To talk about Metro Access Eligibility Recertification Process Advocacy. At 5:35, we will begin the public comment section, and the meeting is scheduled to adjourn at 6 p.m. With that, I'm going to stop sharing my screen, and we will go to the roll call. So when I call out your name, please confirm your presence. Susan Bowmaster.
Here.
Thank you. Darnese Bush. Tino Calabia.
Here, present.
Thank you. Vanessa Coles. Vanessa is on the meeting with us. Rico Dancy.
You
just left the screen.
Present for Vanessa. I'm sorry.
Okay, thank you. Rico was connected with us also. Tawan Farmer. Just want to state Tawan is also connected. All right, next is Debbie Fisher.
Here.
Thank you. Marcy Goldstein.
Yeah.
Thank you. Steve Caffin. Just want to state for the record that Steve did inform ahead of time that he may not be able to join today's meeting. Philippa Mazzell.
Present.
Thank you. Swatha Nandakumar. Sandy Newsell.
Sandy, present.
Thank you. Phil Posner.
Present.
Thank you. Sarah Rod.
Present.
Thank you. Doris Ray. Denise Rush.
Present.
Thank you. Paul Summerford.
Present.
Thank you. Patrick Sheehan.
Here.
Thank you. And Philip Weintraub. Okay, that concludes the roster for today's meeting.
I have a question. Why can't we see all the people that are on this call?
I'm sorry, Marcy, you're asking why can you not see people
On the call.
on the call? So are you not seeing anyone on the call?
No, I'm seeing a couple people, but
Okay.
not all the people that sit present.
Okay. So I wonder if you click on the view, it might have different settings. One might be speaker and one might be gallery, and
Oh,
it might show more people on another page.
okay.
Also, some people have their cameras off.
Yeah.
That is true. That is true. Yes.
All right. So we're going to pick up. This is Paul Summerford, African American male, middle-aged, somewhat shaved head. I'm wearing a kind of cream, peach colored, shirt. Welcome, Metraxas Subcommittee Chair. We're going to go through our any changes, additions to this fully packed agenda today, or can I get a motion to move the agenda as is?
So moved.
All those in favor, please do so by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Nays, abstentions. The motion carries to move the agenda, today's agenda as is. Next, we're going with the minutes from last month's meeting. Are there any changes, corrections, anything like that? If not, since I hear the crickets, can I get a motion to move the last month's subcommittee meeting agenda as is?
So,
second.
All right, all those in favor, please do so by saying aye. Nay.
Aye.
Aye.
Nays, abstentions. The motion carries to move last minute committee meeting minutes as is. Next, we are going to get to our reports, accommodations, customer service, and outreach. Miss Anderson, Allison Anderson and friends, you are on next.
Thank you, Chair Semaford. My name is Allison Anderson. I'm a middle-aged African American female with a two-strand twist hairstyle that's pulled back and a gold sweater. It is my pleasure to introduce Ms. Wanda Muhammad with our past team to give the public comment record from our last meeting. Wanda? We can't hear you. You're still on mute.
Good afternoon, everyone. Can you hear me now?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. My name is Wanda Muhammad. I am a Black middle-aged woman with short black hair, wearing black glasses, and a black turtleneck. There were no outstanding public comments to address from the AAC meeting held on October 6, 2025, or the Metro Access Subcommittee meeting on October 20, 2025. Moving on to commendations, Metro Access received a total of 437 commendations in October, broken down by provider, TransDev OCC with 163, Hubbard Road with 91, Central Avenue with 65, Industrial Road and Challenger both with 44, Abilities Ride with 24, MTM with 6, and this concludes my report today.
Thank you, Wanda. Insofar as outreach, I don't know if Mr. Blake is on to give any information about outreach since our last session.
Ms. Anderson, Mr. Blake will be joining up a bit later.
Okay, so maybe he can provide that information once he joins. But that would, yes, sir.
Oh, that's it.
Okay, that concludes our report. For this month. Thank you.
Thank you. If there's no questions of Ms. Anderson, we are going to move to Ryan Traher for our Metro Access Strategy Study update that we heard about a good number of months ago, and he is back to give us some update information. Please go ahead. You have the floor, and welcome to our subcommittee meeting.
Thank you so much. I'm going to get my slides ready to go, okay? I don't know if someone needs to give me permission to share my screen. I think
Yes.
I've got it.
I'm doing that as we speak.
Excellent. Thank you. All
You should be able to do that now.
right. Give me one moment. Again, if somebody could just confirm they can see that, I'd be happy to get started.
Yes,
Yes.
can.
Yes, I can see it.
Thank you both so much. Hello, everyone. Thank you so much for having me. Again, my name is Ryan Traer. I am a white male with brown hair and a beard, and I'm wearing a blue collared shirt. I'll be doing my best to describe the slides, but I'm also going to be moving at a decent pace to get through the content so we have enough time for discussion. So please let me know if you need me to add more or less detail or if I need to slow down just a little bit. I'm on the title slide right now, and before I get started, just want to emphasize that the themes discussed in this study are not meant to be prescriptive or direct any one specific policy recommendation, but meant to just spur conversation, which we look forward to having here. All right, this next slide covers the background of the study and is just two text boxes. You all are already familiar with WSDC's role and are already very familiar with the current state of Metro Access funding in the region after I presented earlier this year, with Maryland comprising a disproportionate level of subsidy to the service. This slide answers the question, why was this study needed? It's a couple of text boxes connected by arrows. As I just said, Maryland's costs for Metro Access are the highest of the region's jurisdictions because ridership in the two Maryland counties, which corresponds to cost, is the highest. To be specific, in fiscal year 24, Maryland's cost was 61% of the total cost of $199 million. This slide covers the study objective and has a text box with a paper plane next to it. The study's objective was to create a strategy roadmap that addresses this long-term cost curve while maintaining quality service and includes various options the state can consider to achieve that goal. This slide provides an overview of the study's tasks and three title boxes with the text boxes underneath describing the task details. Approach of the study was threefold. Get an understanding of paratransit in the region and how it's being funded, then determine the main drivers for the disproportionately high paratransit costs in Maryland, analyze peer agencies and jurisdictions with similar demographics and circumstances, both locally and nationally, determine if there are any relevant policies that could be replicated in Maryland. And lastly, develop a strategy roadmap that lays out the best approach for Maryland and its effort to manage those long-term costs. This slide introduces the strategy roadmap and has some coins, a van, and a book clip art with text underneath. We're going to go through the strategy roadmap in this presentation. The first phase entails developing a shared understanding of Metro Access and its costs. We're essentially in this phase as we're going around sharing the study with the public and various stakeholders. The second phase presents Maryland with its various policy options that will address paratransit costs while maintaining quality service for its residents. The third phase, simply titled Action, entails stakeholder engagement, implementation, various considerations the state will need to consider or be conscious of while pursuing these potential policies. This slide just introduces phase one. And this slide discusses the Metro Access background and has three text boxes with some clarifying language underneath that explains the state's obligation for ADA paratransit. Not going to spend a lot of time here. Everyone here is familiar with Metro Access, ADA regulations, and how that fits into the region's transportation needs. This slide is also a background on Abilities Ride and is similarly three text boxes. Again, as you all are aware with Abilities Ride, I'm just going to note that this is a mutually beneficial service since the program is popular among customers and provides significant savings for the jurisdictional funders of WMATA, given that the average cost per trip for Abilities Ride is only $33 compared to the $106 for Metro Access. This slide has three bar graphs for the year's fiscal year 22 through fiscal year 24. Each with four bars. The blue stripes is the Montgomery County, gray in spots is Prince George's, the red bar is DC, and the yellow bar is Virginia. You all had a preview of this earlier this year, but this slide illustrates the current reality of paratransit in the region. The Maryland counties make up a significant portion of the Metro Access ridership. This slide has the same layout as the previous, but is describing the subsidy apportionment. So, because Maryland has the most ridership, it subsequently makes up a majority of the subsidies necessary for operating the service. This slide is a table for fiscal years 22 through 24. Again, that's the portion, the years that were part of this study. I'm going to be saying that a lot. With Maryland at the top and each county underneath, and corresponding Metro Access subsidy costs under each of those years. At the end is a total of the monetary changes, both monetarily and the percentage breakdown. So it shows that while Metro Access costs are slightly down in some areas, the overall costs continue to increase over time, similar to how ridership has increased overall modes post-COVID. This slide has two bar graphs with text boxes above them. They both range from fiscal years 22 to 24. The first is a total of paratransit trips broken up by Abilities Ride and Metro Access. The second chart shows total costs. Ridership has increased by over 50% in the region, which can likely be attributed to many of the same factors driving increased ridership elsewhere in the metro system. At the same time, costs have increased by approximately 31%, which is high, but not proportional to ridership, partially due to increased use of Abilities Ride. This slide has text boxes on the left with a map of the region on the right. It depicts Metro Access service area for Maryland and the counties specifically. This is one of the slides I want to highlight that was a major part of the analysis in this study. Using the data of a representative sample day, we were able to determine the fiscal impacts of locally induced Metro Access coverage. As I said before, this simply shows the boundaries created by ride-on and the bus. Essentially, the softer blue color in the middle is what is caused by Metro Bus and Metro Rail service. If you're looking towards the north, at the top of the map in Montgomery County, that darker blue with light blue stripes through it, that is Metro Access coverage that is induced by ride-on. And then if you look south, you'll see Prince George's similar dark blue with blue stripes, and that is the bus causing coverage in that area. This next slide follows up on the previous with a map and text boxes drawing lines to the counties versus the Metro Access service area caused by WMATA operations, like we discussed. It shows the cost breakdown. Total cost to Maryland for Metro Access service was $117.3 million in fiscal year 22, and increased to $120.9 million in fiscal year 24. Those numbers includes cost to Metro Access service in the extended area beyond WMATA's ADA coverage for Metro Bus and Metro Rail. Analysis, again, conducted as part of the study, determined that approximately 20 million of that 120 million annual metro access costs in Maryland, or approximately 17%, stemmed from rides in the extended service area created by local service in the counties. That breaks down to roughly 12.3 million in Montgomery County and 7.9 million in Prince George's County. Want to note here that Maryland's growing costs for metro access within a constrained budget present increasingly difficult trade-offs between metro access service provision and other competing operating and capital project needs. However, I want to emphasize that nothing in the study suggests not providing service in these areas. The state of Maryland is always going to meet its federal obligations for paratransit. This is meant to be illustrative of how some local transit policy decisions have impacted the state's jurisdictional subsidy to WMATA. This slide has two title boxes, one for Montgomery County and the other for Prince George's. Underneath each is three boxes highlighting the three most frequent trip purposes for metro access. So, additionally, demographics are some of the largest cost drivers for paratransit in Maryland. Trips to medical facilities, adult daycare, dialysis, they make up a majority of the trips in the counties. A fact the AAC is probably familiar with and often referenced to understand the scope of dialysis treatment in the US is that 1% of the federal budget alone is dedicated to just dialysis treatment, primarily through Medicare. Maryland and Prince George's County specifically, as you can see here, are seeing these effects through our transportation costs. This slide covers the county-funded specialized transportation services and has two text boxes next to a map of the two Maryland counties. So the study also reviewed all the paratransit alternatives provided locally in the counties, which help contribute to cost savings by moving trips off of metro access. This slide covers Montgomery County. It has text boxes on the side to describe the service. I'll mention in a moment, and then draws to the numbers and descriptions of those savings. For example, in Montgomery County, there is same-day access, call-and-ride, senior rides, all of which divert hundreds of thousands of trips over the 3-year span observed in the study at a dramatically lower cost than metro access, and supported by the county and state funding. The county also subsidizes a wheelchair-accessible taxi service. This slide is the same layout as the previous, but covers Prince George's County. Prince George's also has some metro access alternatives, call a bus, senior transportation services, and call a cab, with significant funding from the county. However, it is noted that the average cost per trip for these services is only marginally lower than metro access. So while it does still provide some savings, it suggests an opportunity to improve the programs and expand their impact on locally based alternatives to metro access. This slide has two text boxes on the left with bulleted language on the right to describe previous work done to drive down costs. We wanted to highlight past efforts to address metro access costs, which includes the pilot program in Montgomery County with a human service agencies or HSAs between 2013 and 2015, and provided a much cheaper alternative. The pilot was eventually repurposed as one of the three Abilities Ride partnerships that exist today, which entails HSAs utilizing a designated provider for their paratransit trips. However, these savings do not go directly to the state of Maryland, so there is currently little direct incentive for individual jurisdictions to further pursue these partnerships. This is the title slide for phase two of the strategy roadmap, and we'll dive into it here. This slide shows three text boxes and the respective number of options to the right for each. So, as we said, phase two involves engaging the state, two Maryland counties, WMATA, and other stakeholders in discussions to collectively consider strategy approaches that address the metro access costs. The three strategy approaches that are complementary, not mutually exclusive, with multiple options under each are one, support and enhance current efforts to address costs, specifically Abilities Ride, with opportunities for limited enhancements to the status quo. Two, expand local coordination and participation from the two Maryland counties to better align how decisions affecting metro access costs are made and funded. And then three, develop partnerships that serve recurring trips that would contribute to reducing demand on metro access. So we'll go into some details here. This slide has a text box on the left discussing Abilities Ride. The right slide has three text boxes that describe the three strategy options. The first strategy focuses on abilities ride and its significant role in reducing costs for metro access. The first option under this strategy suggests updating the paratransit subsidy formula to clarify how savings are calculated. While there's no direct cost savings, it provides the jurisdictions with better understanding and oversight of the program. The second option suggests changing the subsidy allocation formula so that those cost savings measures accrue to the jurisdictions in which they are generated. Excuse me. Particularly the partnerships like those that the HSAs mentioned earlier. Lastly, WMATA could charge for abilities ride. The trips are very popular and the state wants the program to continue its success, but the change would provide some marginal savings. This slide has a similar layout with a text box describing increased coordination between the state and counties, then four numbered text boxes describing the strategy options. So strategy approach two, number two has four options. The first entails improving local fixed route planning and coordination between the state and local jurisdictions to better account for metro access costs. The second option encourages the further expansion of local county-based specialized transportation that provide lower cost alternatives to metro access. The state could consider providing funding support for a comprehensive operational assessment of call bus to provide options for improving the program's efficiency. The third envisions designing ADA paratransit service in Montgomery and Prince George's counties, similar to how they function in Alexandria and Arlington County. Through the study, we realized part of it was Virginia is incentivized the Virginia jurisdictions to provide lower cost alternatives because the state will pay no more than half of the operation subsidy. The fourth option considers a cost-sharing model for trips beyond the ADA paratransit service area caused by WMATA's Metrobus and Metrorail. Currently, the state fully covers these trips. For comparison, all other locally operated transit services in the state of Maryland that receive state funding for ADA services are required to contribute a minimum 10% match. Again, this slide has a similar layout with a text box on the left describing the focus on recurring trips. And two numbered text boxes on the right that list the strategy options. This last approach imagines two alternative programs for dialysis and adult daycare trips. While promising marginal savings for the state, those numbers become less advantageous as abilities ride continues to increase, resulting in a lower composite cost for metro access trips. These program concepts serve as an excellent opportunity, though, particularly if anything compromises ability ride savings in the future. And lastly, phase three, action. That's the slide that we were just on. This slide has four text boxes outlining phase three with a faint arrow drawing from left to right. The third phase of the strategy roadmap is focused on implementation and next steps. WSCC will further engage the state, the two Maryland counties, and with WMATA to determine the preferred approaches to address metro access costs. It's important, again, to emphasize that this phase includes outreach and discussion with stakeholders, specifically the metro access riders and the broader disability community, to solicit feedback on any policies that would impact service. Upon reaching a consensus on strategies to pursue, focus will then turn to implementation, which will include further evaluation and considerations for the state, such as determining who's responsible for leadership and administration of any new service program, developing a timeline and evaluation plan to measure performance, and other options involved with service operation. And we look forward to these conversations, eventually putting these approaches into practice. This last slide is simply my contact information with some clip art of books on the right. With that, I want to thank everyone again for your time. I'm happy to answer any questions. My contact information is there. And if you think of something later, or we don't get a chance to answer your question today, please reach out. I'll do my best to answer anything that comes up. Also, I want to encourage you all to visit our website where we have posted all of the materials that supported the strategy roadmap. I'll share the link in the chat so you can find it there. So I'll leave this up for now, but if anybody has any questions, I'll be happy to dive into it now.
All right, this is Paul Simplefort. So my questions is, as you know, because I'm a resident of Prince George's County. So you talked about some of the alternatives in Prince George's that call a bus. They have advocated in the past, when we discussed it, like call a ride, the big concern with customers is they only have limited hours that they do, which, and they don't do things on appointment time, and it's basically a curb to curb type of service, and that's the does it make it is attractive for Metro Access customers, from what I hear, to want to use the service. And and they've kind of said, go ahead and use Metro Access, and that's how things have been framed.
Sure.
And as you know, of you look at the number of Metro Access customers, the biggest portions come from Maryland. At least one third of the customers are Prince George's County, and showing the numbers that you have, about looks like probably about a third of that number is Montgomery. So one could say about half the customers are Maryland customers that are serviced by Metro Access. Maybe Mr. Blake will solidify that number, but that's my approximation based on prior data that WMATA has shared with us. So given all those things, it would seem that the contribution is high, because half the customers that use Metro Access are at least from Maryland. And then the fact that at least I can only can talk about Prince George's is that some of the alternative services are not as attractive, like Abilities Ride would be, or the actual Metro Access service, where right now we provide, if you're on a dedicated vehicle, seat to door service to make sure, customers are transported in a safe and efficient manner.
That was a lot, so apologies if I missed anything. And if you need me to clarify, I'm happy to do that. To your point, yes, the study did look into the individual counties to try and examine circumstances that might be driving increased ridership. That's where we talked a little bit about the trip purpose and what's bringing people to Metro Access. Abilities Ride mostly operates in DC. That's where the most TNCs are, Ubers, Lyfts, those kind of things. So a lot of it's just a lack of option. And that's kind of why we discussed potentially looking into ways to support the counties in doing more of what they're already doing, but better. And like, what can we do to support that? So that'll be a part of the discussion moving forward is what already exists, what can we do to enable that and make it even better? But I hear your point. That's exactly what we found. A lot of the costs are stemming from ridership, and like you said, the two Maryland counties make up approximately 60% of the ridership in the DMV. So that's what's driving a lot of the costs. I know that you had a couple other things in there. Is there something else you want to reiterate that I can potentially answer then?
Oh no, just the alternatives, like in my county, where it's not as attractive to customers to use. If there are ways to make the service more attractive, like with call a ride and things like that, like their hours are far more restrictive, extremely limited, and they don't provide like an appointment time. You just get the pickup time, and that doesn't work well with a lot of customers' preferences of getting from A to B by a certain time and things like that. And that's why I suspect it's not, used, those alternatives are not utilized versus Metro Access and, for dedicated and abilities ride within, Metro Access. But with that, I see other people. I see Debbie's hand was up, followed by Sarah, and Anu's going to help me with the speaking order after that, with your questions. Debbie, go ahead.
Thank you. This is actually an old question because it's come up before. But one of the challenges in Maryland is that, in a way, there's money left on the table because the long-term Medicaid programs are being given to, at least, let's say, in the developmental disability arena, the money's being given to the providers rather than put into a general pool for accessing paratransit or ADA transportation. And the result is, I think that there are enormous inefficiencies. Now, I understand there are parts of the state where there are no public transport, or there is limited public transportation. And so the challenges are different. But I think for both Montgomery and Prince George's County, for example, if there were a way to convince the state to consider using those dollars differently, I think it could leverage it much further. And then you've got the county that gets some of the money for transportation and the state. I mean, I think that there's a funding inefficiency that may be contributing to all of this. And I thought I saw Buffy might be on the call, and I know that's something she's looked at in the past. So, and I don't know if Mr. Blake is on, but I just needed to say it again because it comes up all the time when we're talking about limited funds for transportation and ADA and paratransit.
Yes, first, a couple things. One, if you see me looking off on my other screen taking notes, just want to try to make sure I'm capturing what people are saying. And also, yes, thank you for shouting out Buffy. I'm sure she's on this call. She sent me an email this morning. I didn't have time to respond to it because I was so busy. But Buffy was the project lead on this from KFH, and they were incredible partners on this study. So I'd be remiss if I did not shout out their great work in producing this for us. So yes, if Buffy is here and is interested in participating to answer a question, I'd gladly take her help on this. We did not look too much at Medicaid, but sincerely appreciate the feedback, and that's something I'm happy to look into more in depth.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sarah. You're up next.
Okay. So I am from Alexandria, not from Maryland. And so my questions are a little bit different. Thank you so much for all of this information. I felt like it was a fire hose, and it's not a lot of it was just fascinating. I wanted to step back and ask a question to make sure I understood some of it. When you're talking about the charges that go back to the different jurisdictions, to, you know, my case, Alexandria, or what you're looking at for Maryland, regarding like abilities ride, were you saying that those jurisdictions basically get charged the same rate as if we were using a Metro Access ride? And so like the savings are being kept by WMATA, is that? I'm just making sure I understand that.
Yeah, that's a fair question. So that's part of what we were we concluded in this study was trying to get more clarity on the subsidy formula for Metro Access and where Abilities Ride fits into that. Currently, as I understand it, and again, if Mr. Blake is on the call and wants to clarify, I'd welcome. But essentially, the savings from Abilities Ride accrues to the jurisdictions proportional to the ridership that occurs in that jurisdiction. And there's nothing inherently wrong with that. It's more so that if you are trying to set up the partnerships that were emphasized as huge successes with the HSAs in Montgomery County, the individual jurisdictions, if they wanted to leverage that as a way for savings, there isn't much incentive to do it because, as it exists right now, there's no direct, one-to-one savings for the state or the jurisdiction that would try and implement one of those. So that's what I was trying to emphasize. Apologies if I glossed over that. If I can provide more clarification, I'm happy to do that.
So I'm still confused. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay.
So if I take a ride on Metro Access and I'm riding on a Metro Access vehicle, does it get charged any differently back to the state? I mean, the different jurisdictions than if I'm taking Metro Abilities Ride?
That I'm not sure if I can answer again. I think that's probably something that Mr. Blake would need to clarify. Again, the way it directly works for charging the states is a little bit beyond my understanding.
Would you
Okay,
like
because I
me to
thought
try? I'm sorry I'm a little late, but if you like me to join in, I can.
that'd be great if you could clarify that question. I'd
Excellent.
appreciate
Go ahead.
it. Thank you.
Blake here. So Our budget is based on demand for Metro Access, and we pay Metro Access contractors because we're a safety net, not by the trip per se, but by the hour. That's how we're paying them. We're charging the jurisdictions per trip. What we're doing with the Abilities Ride program, in addition to providing customers an alternative that doesn't have to be paratransit and encouraging people with disabilities to utilize their abilities and independence, what we're doing is saving on the difference between how much we would have already sunk into Metro Access versus how much we're paying for that trip. So if there were no Abilities Ride, for example, back in 2016, we would set a budget for the jurisdictions based on our forecasted number of trips, customers taking trips on Metro Access, and how many vehicles, those Metro Access vehicles with the M, and how many hours of those vehicles need to be on the road to cover all the trips that Metro Access customers are going to demand over the course of a year. With the Abilities Ride program, we still do the exact same thing. We say to the jurisdictions, this is how much it's going to cost you to cover all of that. But instead of all of the trips being on the big M vehicles with those costs, we now put fewer vehicles with the M on the side and allow more trips to go on Uber or taxi and other services that are at our lower cost. So we then say to the jurisdictions up front, your cost is going to be lower than it otherwise would have been. Now, the question that has always come up, well, why don't you just put everybody on Uber or taxi or what have you? Well, that would be nice, but we're the safety net, and we cannot just say everybody, because Uber and the taxis and the other services, even those that are providing door-to-door service, are not classified as ADA paratransit. What you read in the Americans with Disabilities Act and what they're providing, while it may look the same and look similar, it is not ADA paratransit service. So we need to make sure that there are enough vehicles with the letter M that can be available all day long in the same areas in the same hours as our bus and rail. We don't use Ubers and taxis for that. We use Metro Access service.
Okay, thank you very much. That helps that clarify. So that basically the cost savings gets shared between the jurisdictions and WMATA. So I
With
had
the
that.
jurisdictions, yes, because they're the ones actually paying for the service.
Okay. Oh, that's true. Okay. So second question. One of the different options you mentioned that you were looking at was like this the same day, like on-call taxi, reduced fare type systems. And I was wondering if you had looked at how much they draw away from Metro Access use in the same way that Abilities Ride does. Like, are they even more popular, equally popular, or is are there sort of how is that but figured into the calculations?
We didn't go into that level of depth. We don't want to cannibalize programs that are already functioning and providing, good alternatives by any means. But I will say that any kind of new service is going to require a much greater administrative lift than some of the more enhancements to the status quo, like we talked about. So that's a little bit further out and would require significantly more evaluation to kind of answer the question that you're asking is how viable is this, and is it going to actually give us the returns that we need? Is it going to where are those customers going to be coming from? Are they going to be coming from Metro Access? Or are they going to be coming from some other program? Are we just shifting people from the like say Prince George's County? Like if somebody's already a regular rider on one of their alternative services and then they just move to this one, or are we just shifting stuff around? So that's all going to be a part of the conversation if we do decide to eventually pursue any of these new service like potential services.
All right, thank you.
All right, and just want to make the announcement for any members of the public. This conversations with committee members. If you do have comments related to this, please save them for the public comment period. You'll get to speak then. That's how we kind of work this, just to make that general announcement. Are there any other committee members that want to speak to this particular topic? Because we do need to move on to the next big one about eligibility.
Chair Somerford, this is Anu. I do
Yes.
not see any hands up by the AAC members. Patrick just raised his hand. Patrick, go ahead.
I'm sorry. Anu, did you say there was somebody else in front of me?
No.
No? Okay,
No.
thanks. Couple of questions. You've got a lot of information here, which is pretty hard to digest all of it and figure out what to do with it. You also said you've been talking to other stakeholders, jurisdictions, or whatever. Have you come up with any types of recommendations going forward? Where do you see we can make the greatest improvement? I'm not sure what we're driving at here, other than that we have a lot of data. And we know that Prince George's County, for instance, they have a transit vision plan, which might change a little bit of the equation. But what does all this data and the stakeholders' input tell you right now?
That's a good question. We have been in talks with the counties, like I said, and WMATA to determine, kind of get feedback on where we go from here. And they have mentioned their transit vision plan, for instance, in Prince George's County. Like I said, there's no like any single one of these that we are necessarily pursuing right away. I will say within WSCC's purview, like we have the greatest connection to WMATA, so anything that can be of, direct influence with WMATA or board policy or things like that, that's where we'd probably be able to have the greatest opportunity, at least on an immediate level. But like longer term things are going to require, more conversation. And that's, I hear your point about this is like a whole lot of information and not a whole lot of okay, what's happening next? And that was by design. We really were not trying to say that this study is going to result in any one implementation. It's meant to start driving that conversation and where do we go next. So that's what this is about, and we appreciate hearing this kind of feedback. We'll of course be happy to return to provide further presentations if there are any policy changes that are act like being further considered, and we'll communicate that.
Okay, so then I guess last question, because that's kind of what I was thinking too. I assume that then these reports are being sent over to Mr. Blake and his people to digest and come up with some recommendation based on all the data that's here. I know that with respect to Jordan Holt, they're coming up with all kinds of metrics, which include metro access, on-time performance, and that sort of thing. So I would imagine, since we've got a sort of presentation one and presentation two chock full of data, where does this report go from here?
Great question. Yes, we work closely with WMATA, but this is primarily in Maryland's court for now. But once we actually get to evaluating any potential policy changes, and if that requires like further evaluation, we'll work with the Metro on that. Like I said, I'm going to be sharing a link to our website that has links to these documents so that you can review it in greater detail. It has already been shared with WMATA. They have these documents themselves, and we'll be collaborating with them moving forward.
You'll be collaborating. I'm sorry.
Just if there are any like policy changes that affect WMATA service or anything like that, or anything related to metro access or abilities ride, we'll be working with WMATA. They've been really supportive of this study so far, and we look forward to doing more with them. And like I said, we'll be communicating with you all about that, so you're clued into any kind of steps or changes that we discuss.
Perfect. Okay. That's great. I feel overwhelmed by all the data. It's great. I don't know where it's useful and where we can make the greatest difference to the greatest amount of people, considering particularly the money or lack of that we're going to see in Maryland over the next 2 years. And all of that comes into play. Yeah. Okay.
All
Perfect.
right. Thank
Mr.
you.
Blake, any comments on that?
All right. right? I don't
No,
hear from.
other than saying, in large measure, my job is to be responsive to the jurisdictions because they are the ones paying for the service, and through my bosses and protocol. But largely, I come up with some ideas. My team and I, we work together on some ideas. Abilities Ride has been kind of the center point of our ideas and trying to make the customers' lives better. That's our goal. We want to be totally safe and customer friendly. And I always say we are the most customer friendly paratransit service in the nation. That's without question. But we want to be the best as well. We want to be efficient. But we are certainly open to ideas and making adjustments if and when the jurisdictions come up with some system-wide or even just in their own portion of the service area. And of course, before we make any drastic changes that will impact the customers' lives, of course, we would share that with you, the customer, probably in partnership with Ryan or whoever the jurisdiction representative is asking us to make certain changes and adjustments.
Great. And being able to make data-driven decisions is important. Looks like we have the first step here done, all the data. Good.
All
Thanks,
right.
sir.
All right, Phil, you're the last to speak because we do need to get to eligibility because that's going to take the rest of this and get the customer comment period. So please be brief and to the point with your questions, Phil.
Yes, I'm an old white guy, 6 foot 2, 180 pounds, no hair. And just being old, I remind everybody this comes about every year when the WMATA budget comes out, because the jurisdictions have to contribute. And initially, people realized Arlington was hardly paying anything because they had their own program. And so, depending upon the jurisdiction, Maryland gets their money from Annapolis. So, it's not coming out of their local budget, their local revenue taxes and fees. So, they're in a different situation than Virginia, where the local governments are actually paying it out of their own tax base and the fees for the project. And so when the final comes up, the individual jurisdictions are going to pick the most economically sound way to go. So if they find out that contributing what they have to WMATA, Metro Access, is less than it would cost them to set up their own system, then they'll go for that. Particularly Prince George's County or Montgomery County, because that contribution to WMATA actually does come from the state, not from their pocketbooks. So the data is really important, but that's what gives them the decision as to what works. For the riders, as you know, over the years, as someone who used to live in Northern Virginia, getting Abilities Ride, where you had a choice of taxi cabs or Uber or other transportation, which was more efficient for where you wanted to go. And also, you weren't limited to your own jurisdiction. So these are all local choices, and the choices made by the commissions in each jurisdiction is going to be based on pocketbook. But if they want to get reelected, they're going to listen to their ridership.
Thank you, Phil.
My son would
We
say
gotta
they
move.
love having Abilities Ride and Uber because the prices for the riders are about the same. But it's much more convenient to have the others. Or if somebody comes up with some same day reservations and variable pickup times and smaller shared rides and things like that. So that's why the data is good. And expect this over the next year and every time there's a budget talk for the entire system,
All right.
for
Thank
this
you,
to go
Phil.
out
We got to
and for
move.
you to get the ridership to let their elected officials know convenience along with price. Okay, that's it.
Yeah, we got to move. Rico, is this related to this topic? Because we got to get to eligibility. It is almost 5 o'clock. Is this a quick question related to this topic that from this presentation? Or
Have we thought about bringing our elected official, the new governor of Virginia, involved in this conversation also?
we haven't gone that far, but we did work closely with our jurisdictional partners in Virginia while we were researching this, and we'll continue to engage with them as we explore potential options, especially anything that would affect the other partners in the compact. So if it reaches that point, maybe, but we're not at that stage yet. But appreciate the recommendation.
All right, thank you so much, Rico.
Yes,
Thank
in
you for the
Virginia,
conversation.
the legislature
All right,
does the budget.
yeah.
The only thing the governor can do is veto
All right. Thank you, Phil. All right. Thank
it.
you, Ryan, for coming to us. We will expect you again in the future, working through a new and Metro Access Management. Next, Mr. Colbert, your presentation about Metro Access eligibility and recertification. Please go ahead, followed by Sarah and her advocacy and her proposal. Are you ready, Mr. Colbert? I saw you on
Yes,
screen. All
Paul, I'm ready.
right.
Christopher Colbert, Director of Metro's Office of Eligibility, Certification and Outreach, also known as the Transit Accessibility Center, which is our brick and mortar office. I know you guys are anxious to discuss the this process on your own. So I'll try to be brief with this. I think I will be, mostly because we're talking about recertification here. So if you are a current Metro Access customer who is currently eligible and seeking to recertify your eligibility, you've kind of already gone through that process once. The process for recertification is fairly similar to that process for certifying initially, although there are a few key differences that we do that try to alleviate some of the pressure or difficulty that is trying to get this service. So, if you are a current Metro Access customer and you are in need of recertifying, the first step I would say comes from our end with an automated reminder phone call. We send out three, one at 60 days prior to your expiration date, one at 30 days prior to your expiration date, and then one the day of your expiration date. That phone call basically lets you know that your eligibility is set to expire soon and that you need to contact the Office of Eligibility for further instructions. So the next step after that would be obviously to contact us. There is a reason that we ask customers to contact us as opposed to just filling out a new application. And part of that reason is because we have two different applications that you may be asked to complete if you are recertifying for Metro Access. So if you are a customer who is determined fully eligible for Metro Access, meaning that you were given 5 years of eligibility and an ID card that is only good for Metro Access, not the bus and rail, but just Metro Access. It is a card with a blue background. Or if, generally speaking, if you have a long-term disability that is unlikely to change and affect your ability to travel, then we will be able to give you what is called an administrative recertification application. And that's basically just an abbreviated application, one page for the customer, one page for the healthcare provider to complete. And that application can then be mailed, emailed, or faxed to our office to be processed. If you are a customer who is approved for short-term eligibility, or if you have a diagnosis that does have potential for change, then we may ask you to complete the typical Metro Access application with more pages for the doctor, just so that we have all of that information. Once we have received that application, pretty much it follows the whole or the same process for certification in general. That application is first reviewed to make sure that it is complete. Once that's determined, then we will assign it to one of our eligibility specialists. That eligibility specialist will then review that application to determine whether or not we need to have the customer come in for an assessment, or if we're able to make that determination based on the information that we have available. And in either case, if we're able to just make that determination right then and there, then the specialist will go ahead and process that application in our database, print out and make the appropriate ID cards, and mail them out to the customer with their determination letter. And of course, if you are determined in need of completing an assessment, then we would contact you to make those arrangements. And then upon completion, we would send out the determination letter and the appropriate cards after that determination. And that is pretty much it.
Any questions from committee members of Mr. Colbert? I see hands starting with Vanessa, with Phil, and next with Phil and Anu. Help me with the speaking order. So we'll go with Vanessa first and then Phil.
Yes, hi, thank you. I'm a middle-aged African American with my hair and curls, and I'm wearing a yellow t-shirt today. So my question concerning the verification process or eligibility process, were you just going over the new client, or were you going over a recertified one? That was one question, because I've had a lot of consumers come to me and they've put their application in, the doctor sent their information, and it seems to go in a dark hole. So I know specifically of one person who still have not heard and have to resend their information after at least 30 days. And I know it says 21 days according to ADA. What's going on with that process? Because, and also, are they able to hand walk their application into the office in DC from the doctor's office to WMATA and get quicker response?
Sure. So to answer your first question, I was asked to present on the recertification process only. But the reality is the process is virtually the same. The only difference being that we have a different application type for certain customers who are eligible for the administrative recertification. As far as receiving the applications are concerned, we do acknowledge that there are some difficulties with that, for a number of reasons. And if you've been around long enough, you'll remember there was a time when we only accepted applications by mail. And we opted to requiring customers to call us with a completed application in order for us to review that application on the phone and schedule an in-person assessment so that the customer could hand deliver that application to us upon their assessment date, so we could ensure that we got that in person. Unfortunately, there are occasionally issues with mail being received by us that I think is just unfortunately pitfalls of using the post office. We do also have two other sort of technology issues. One is we have a number of customers and doctor's offices and other folks who will send applications to us by fax. And while we certainly will gladly accept applications by fax, that technology also does not seem to be entirely reliable. And so we're not always getting the full application when it's received. And depending on which part of the application is received, we may not have any idea even where it came from or who it belongs to reach out to that customer. The third issue that we've noticed is that by mail, WMATA does have a size limit for our email. And so after working with some customers, we've realized that that's ended up being the issue, that an application is sent to us and the file size is just too large and we just never see it. We do work pretty quickly with customers when we do get those issues, but of course the problem that we run into is that if we don't have eyes on the application, if we're not able to get a hold of it, it's hard for us to be able to make a true decision for the customer, which is why we do have to ask some customers to submit it again. To answer your final question, yes, we will gladly take hand-delivered applications. We do that all the time. Our office is open Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. And of course, that is excluding federal holidays.
Well, can I add something?
Okay.
And I didn't introduce myself when I answered the last question, but I heard my name, Christian Blake, Vice President of Access Services, Black male. And I'm gonna be nice, Miss Coles, today because yellow is my wife's favorite color. So appreciate you wearing yellow. But here's my question, Ms. Coles. And see, and I hear you. And yes, it's 21 days. That's the max that it will take. And if we don't do our job in 21 days, automatic presumptive eligibility, period. Now, the only thing I would just ask, though, from, and this is not about you, Ms. Coles, this is about everybody. The
Right,
AAC
I'm just,
isn't.
yeah.
No, but the AAC is an arm of the community. You're a voice of the community. And one thing in the community, once the word gets out, it starts to spread. But if you have customers telling you that it's taking forever to get an application, I appreciate you mentioning it today, but my number is public. All it takes is a text message or a phone call, and we can get on it. And I would just say part of, and one reason I say we are the most customer-friendly paratransit service in the nation by far, and that's never been disputed, but I'm always up for a good debate. It's not just the free rides, it's not just the expanded service area, not just the expanded hours, and it's not just even taking a vehicle preference into consideration. It's because you have the absolute leader of the program with a public phone number that the customers can use. When I'm gone, I don't think you're going to be able to call a person who's running this service on their cell phone on a Saturday or Sunday morning, or as Mr. Semaphore knows, on a Friday night. If we don't take advantage of the communication, I won't know that there is a bottleneck with some customers you're hearing from, but also I won't be able to help them. So I'm encouraging you and others, when you hear from consumers, if there's an issue, if you don't let me know about it, we can't do anything about it. So I certainly want to hear the names or receive the names of the consumers who have been delayed, whether it's from you, Ms. Coles, or anybody else on the AAC or anyone else in the public, so that we can get to it. Because if we've had their application for more than 21 days, and to Mr. Colbert's point, there may be other things. We may not even have the application. There could be other things going on. But if we've had their application for more than 21 days, we're going to give them a new card tomorrow. But I only can make that happen if I'm informed about it.
Now, that particular person I'm referring to is a new applicant. So what is the best method? Because should they just let their physician fax it into a certain fax, or should they pick it up from the physician and walk it into Metro Access themselves to make the process shorter? This is a new applicant.
I believe that all, if we make various means available, then all means are treated equally. Now, Mr. Colbert pointed out that facsimile is kind of an older technology, so there can be some issues with that. He pointed out that email sizes, and depending on how large they save the PDF that's finally signed by the doctor, could create some issues. The best thing to do is to, however you deliver it to Metro Access, if you haven't heard from Metro Access in a reasonable amount of time, yes, tell the Vanessa Coles of the world, and I would like you to get in touch with us, but they should also be willing to follow up with the eligibility office and ask for a status of their application.
And yeah, they do, Mr. Blake. They do. These people okay. are calling.
Okay, so what I need you to do is give me their names. If they're not getting any satisfaction, how can the leader help if I'm not aware of their particular individual case?
Okay, I'll text you the one. All right, I'll text you the one person that I know of. Sure. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Phil, followed by Rico.
Yes, Christopher, because STAR requires Metro Access eligibility. In the old days, last time I renewed, you guys automatically contacted STAR for the Arlington residents. And are you still doing that? Or does someone have to have STAR contact you or have the customer? Because that was convenient.
We are not still doing that. I'm not sure how they're verifying our eligibility these days, if I'm being honest. We've not had much communication with them since I'd say around the pandemic, oddly enough.
Okay, well, I'll talk to them and find out how they're doing it. I also remember last time that I had to renew the applications used to have to come directly from the physician, so that the customer, the potential customer, gave the application to the physician or the physical therapist or whoever is certifying it, and they had to fill it out, sign it, and send it to you. It never came back to the customer. Is that still the case?
Well, prior to the pandemic, we were only accepting applications in person. If you were new, if you were recertifying, we were also accepting them by mail. If you were given specific instructions, we never had a policy in place that mandated that an application had to be received from the doctor's office specifically, and that's certainly not how we've been operating with our application reception since about 2020. So if a customer goes to their healthcare provider, it is possible that you could run across a doctor who insists that they'd send the application to us directly. I have heard customers who have said that. But that's not part of our policy. Which means that customers, if they want to rely on their healthcare provider to submit that application, they're more than welcome to do that. I I do strongly encourage customers to do that on their own if they can, because things sometimes get lost in the shuffle. And I would rather have a customer be able to take that ownership and do it themselves if they're able to, whether that's mailing it, emailing it, faxing it, or delivering it directly to us, if that's their preference.
No, that's very good. The clinicians are very, because on the application, not only do you get the clinician signature, but also their license number.
Right.
And those are both very precious things for people that want medications.
Right.
And so that's one of the reasons that they never came back to the customer, because not all
Yeah.
customers are as nice as other customers.
Yeah, and if that's the case, like I said, that's probably the policy of that practice. But truth be told, it's not very hard these days to find someone's license number that's public information. So it's not very guarded information. But but yeah, that's what our policy is currently.
Okay, that's good. The reason I asked is that that may be what's causing some of the delays.
Yeah. Yeah,
But
we I
otherwise.
I would say that we do get a lot of headache from trying to track down who actually sent the application. We'll get customers who call in saying, "I sent the application," and when you start digging into it, it turns out that their caseworker had the application, or their healthcare provider had the application and either said they were going to send it or thought they sent it or whatever, but it wasn't actually sent. So I mean, the good news is most doctors' offices keep copies of those records. And if it comes down to it, we will gladly accept a copy too if it becomes difficult to find. So
Yes, thank
we
you. I have to add that I have never had a problem with renewal. And
I
I have
despite
not heard of a lot of complaints coming from Arlington, but I'm just
yeah
asking to make sure that's still the case now that I'm not there anymore.
D despite despite popular belief, we
Yeah.
really are trying to make it as easy as possible within the rules that we have before us. So
All right. Thank you. Now, Rico's next, followed by Susan. Now, we need to have a counter proposal and by Sarah, not counter proposal, but her advocacy piece on this topic. And we have customer comment period, and I'm sure there's a lot of customers. So we need to make a decision whether we're going to finish with questions with him, which we will, I guess, do. And do customer comment, or Sarah, I can continue this into next month's meeting if necessary to give you the necessary time you need and have you start on the agenda.
I think I can cover mine pretty quickly. Why don't we do the questions, and then if I get cut off, then we can always, as you said, move it on. But I think I can cover what I need to cover pretty quick.
All right, so let's go what we have, and then for questions, so Rico, then Susan, anyone else new, and then we're going to try Sarah, and we do need to get customer comment period in with the customers because that's what they came for, and be done by 6. So go ahead, Rico, with your question.
So you said y'all put a contact us in 60 days, then 30 days, and I think the day of before the thing expired. That is not true because two consumers who are deaf who have did not get a call. They just requested the application, the recertification application this month, and they're expired the end of the month. So tell me, how do that process work?
Sure. So they are automated phone calls. So there are a couple of things that come into play with those calls. First, making sure that the phone number is correct, which is something that we see as an issue that comes up quite a bit. The other thing is if this is someone who has previously contacted us, we do often give customers extensions. And so if there's an extension granted, that will reset that process. So if their card is, let's say their card says it expires in February, and we give them an extra 30 days, which that's not typically something we will do, but if that's the case, it will reset this. The downside of that, of course, is that if customers are receiving those phone calls, they may get those phone calls a little bit more often as we make those extensions as well.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Susan. You're up next.
Okay, hi. I have senior white female, short gray hair, wearing a brown sweater. I have two quick questions. First of all, I thought at one time the ADA definition of an eligible person was a person with a permanent disability. So I'm wondering if the coverage of people with short-term disabilities, is that based on an ADA definition or another decision that the agency made? My second question is the purpose for recertification so that the agency has current data on the customers it serves? Because for those of us whose situations haven't changed in 30 years, it's kind of, you know, gee, why are they asking me this again? And those are my two questions.
Sure. So the main reasons we do so to answer your first question.
Can I chime in there, Colbert, just if you don't mind? So, and Mr. Colbert is going to follow up, but as we had this discussion previously, part of the reason, yes, is the record keeping, and Mr. Colbert can go into more of that. One of the things I talked about in our previous conversations, however, is the spirit of the ADA. And because, yes, conditions may not change with the individual, but the key core for the ADA has been a commitment by public transit agencies to make their fixed route service fully accessible. So while the disability may not change, as we continue and as public transit agencies continue to make their fixed route service, which is the goal, to have everybody utilizing fixed route service, that's the spirit, then theoretically, we do have a right to check on the status of the customer and make a decision on their eligibility, not based on their disability, but based on the investments and improvements in the fixed route service that now has removed the barriers that prevented them from previously using fixed route service. That's the spirit okay. that we're working under. But Mr. Colbert can talk more about the reality of the day-to-day, year-to-year reasons for the eligibility recertification process.
Yeah, that really is it in a nutshell. Permanent disability is not a qualifier, and as a matter of fact, it is disability coupled with functionality. So we have to first determine that a customer has a disability, and then from that point, we have to further determine that that customer's disability prevents them from being able to utilize the fixed route bus and rail system. And that really is the crux of why we do periodic recertifications, is because, you know, we will acknowledge that there are instances where no matter what, someone's functionality and condition is never going to change. But there are advances in technology, both with respect to vehicles and mobility devices that do change someone's ability to be able to access the fixed route system. And I'll also add that can go both ways. Right. So you could have a customer who, certifies 3 years ago, and they come back 3 years later and they're now fully eligible because they can't use the system at all. And you can have those instances go the other way as well, albeit though they are rare. So but that is the main reason that we do that. And yes, being able to confirm a customer's contact information and ensure that it is the customer who is still using the service, that's kind of a bonus for us. But it really is just making sure, hey, just checking in to make sure that the service that you have is still the service you need.
Okay. Thank you.
All right, thank you so much. All right, if there's not any other committee members to speak on this, I would like Sarah to give her proposal, and I want to get the customer comment period, because we need to get all these other customers in before 6, before the interpreters leave us. So, Sarah, are we ready?
Okay, thanks, Paul. I will try to do this speedwise. So, right, so this is Sarah, and I am a middle-aged white female wearing a bright blue sweatshirt today. Before I start with my comments, I have a couple of comments about the presenter. First, I wanted to echo what Rico said with the phone calls. I know the last time that I was supposed to get recertified, I did not get any notifications, and I think I ended up being in lapse, and people were very kind, and it all worked out in the end. But there's definitely some issues, I think, with that phone call system, unless it's fairly new. The other is, I believe the instructions on the current applications, both for initial approval and for recertification, need some updating because I think it says you can only contact WMATA, get your information in via one particular route, and then I've been told that no, in fact, you can use all these other routes as well. So that might use a little just sort of administrative update. Okay. So, just to refresh people's memory, this all started with a comment from one of our wonderful members of the public who informed us that there had been a change in Maryland law that was creating basically a category for permanent disability for people using their reduced fare system. Now, we all know that the reduced fare system is not quite the same equivalent to a paratransit system, but it's an interesting parallel. And we had a good conversation. And actually, several follow-on conversations. I think it came up a couple of different times. And many members of this committee agreed that it seemed kind of unfortunate, as Sue had just said, that we're people who have been on the system for a long time that have a disability that isn't going to change have to keep sending in the same paperwork over and over and over again. And for some of our riders, that's actually a really big burden. For some people, the going to the doctor or paying the doctor's fees or paying the metro access fees to get to the doctor and other things is a significant hurdle for them. And so we had all kind of agreed, I think, that we thought that it would be good to look into seeing what we could do about it, if there were changes that we could make within the system. Mr. Blake pointed out a few things he was concerned about. And so then I started doing some research. So first I went to try to get smart on the ADA, what it actually says, and then realize that a lot of the guidance is also in the Department of Transportation and the FDA. And I read a lot of regulations that made my head spin. Eventually, I sort of figured out what I thought the parameters were that we could work with, like what would be allowed and what wouldn't be allowed, legally speaking. And then I started doing some research with some help and a lot of other nice people into other transit systems and seeing, well, is anybody else doing something like having permanent status or getting rid of the medical evaluations or things like that? And I discovered that there actually are quite a number of different systems. A number of different cities do things, they all do things a little bit differently. They all have slightly different systems, and it's very hard to get the detailed information on them, exactly how they work. But after some research, I did find that there was a bunch of systems out there that, like us, were trying to make things easier on customers and also trying to make things easier on the people sorting through all those applications. And so they had come up with ways to sort of streamline the system. And then I stumbled across what I consider to be gold, and that is a proposal from the state of California. At the time, it was just a proposal. It was a bill. It has now been signed into law, but they've actually basically incorporated exactly what I think we at the AAC had been talking about. And that is basically a system that for people who have permanent disabilities or disabilities that are very unlikely to change, there's a bunch of different wording that's out there that we could discuss exactly what you want to call it. But for those folks, they did not need to keep filing the same paperwork for the to prove that they have the same disability over and over again. So that once you are certified once you've gone through the process and it has been determined between the medical evaluation and the eligibility evaluation that you are qualified to use paratransit, and the doctor is saying that this condition is very unlikely to change over time, that you no longer need to keep filing the same paperwork. They also have a 5-year cycle. So just as the previous presenter was saying, there, that is a reasonable time limit for some of these things. So the proposal that I came up with, which hopefully you all have read, I know it was long and part of it was probably very boring, but basically lays out the two big changes, and that would be for people with permanent disabilities, whether it's conditional or unconditional eligibility, either one of those categories. That when you recertify, it's only every 5 years, and the recertification process is does not require repeat medical evaluation. It would require things to check in to prove that you are still eligible, like you're still at the same address, that you're still the same person, that you're still using this service, a number of other basic things like that. And I took the template from California, which made me feel a lot better because I know that it has gone through a lot of legal evaluation and debate among different people before it ever got to become a law. So I don't think that we're out there on our own saying, hey, this is a crazy idea, let's try this. And I will say, I know Mr. Blake raised a number of things that he was concerned about, or things that could go wrong in this process. The good thing about the system is that it doesn't eliminate any of the safety net type things that we're talking about. So it does not change the original eligibility. It is still exactly the same eligibility standard that is written into the ADA that Metro has been using all this time. There's still the chance for either WMATA or the customer to ask for a complete reevaluation or to ask for an evaluation if there's a denial. And so all the same safety net type things are in there. You're not changing anything about who could be eligible. So we're not expanding access, and we're not creating opportunities for fraud. And I'll get back to that in a second, because I know that had come up several different times. So let's see. The big benefits, this is very clean, simple sort of change to things. The vetting process is all the same. It's already been vetted through the state of California. And so I think we're standing on solid ground asking to do this. I think it's going to benefit everyone. It's going to be easier for the customers. It should be easier for the staff. In theory, at least, it should reduce some costs. If you're reducing administrative overhead, then hopefully some of the costs will go down. And I really don't think there's much of a downside. So in terms of the fraud front, the concern, as I understand it, and Mr. Blake will sure correct me if I'm wrong, the issue is not that people who aren't qualified for eligibility are getting certified or recertified. The bigger issue is that the identification cards, the white unconditional I can ride for free cards, are sometimes ending up in the hands of people who are not the intended person. And the recertification process really has nothing to do with that. And if we want to have a discussion about how to reduce fraud, I'm happy to. I actually spent some time thinking about it and I have some ideas, but it really doesn't have anything to do with whether or not you have medical documentation. That's not the problem. And then the other thing that's come up several times today already is the idea that the system itself may become more accessible over time. And so we don't want to have a permanent eligibility. Well, first of all, this isn't a permanent eligibility. It's still getting recertified every 5 years. But this still builds in all the same safeguards there. So every 5 years, there's an automatic recheck, and there's an opportunity to put in new questions or to add a question to the very simple questionnaire, like I don't know what it would be. Or if there's been some major update that happens, like there's some new technology that miraculously make things much, much easier for everyone, then WMATA is completely free to do a new whole new certification or add that into the next round, like to change things. It doesn't stop people from doing it, and it's not a permanent thing. It's just reducing the biggest barrier that people keep identifying, which is having to go to the doctor's office, get the medical forms redone. And so getting to the one of the examples that I wanted to use, and I was thinking about this, what kind of technology might change that would improve things. I don't think we'll ever get to the point where we have truly universal ability to use public access. And if you think about, trying to think of a good example, and say there's a disability, a condition out there, and actually I know people that have this, that have temperature intolerance, right? They really can't handle being out in the cold or the heat. And WMATA can't fix that. No matter what we do, they can't control the weather. So like there's nothing they could do to the system that would make those people not need paratransit in high or low temperature situations. So I mean, there could be technology that might help somebody who is blind navigate things that they couldn't previously navigate. But then again, if you're relying on technology, there's people out there that are not going to be comfortable with technology, no matter how good it is. So I hear you, Mr. Blake, but I think there's also a good case to be made that I think as technology comes along, then that would trigger something as opposed to saying, oh, we have to have this review every few years because a technology could happen. It's sort of flipping things on its head. And I guess I'll leave it at that and see if people have questions for me.
All right, Sarah, this is how we're gonna do it. I want to continue your conversation, either moving this to AAC during our in-person meeting, if Pat will allow it, or move you as the first topic because we have to take these public comments because there's a lot of them before we get off at 6 o'clock. Is that okay with you? If Pat is okay with that, Pat, can we move this to your AAC meeting in December? Or do you want me to bring this back her first on the subcommittee meeting? All right. Not hearing from Patrick. Sarah, is it okay if I move this to the next subcommittee meeting? Because we probably need to discuss it further before we push it out to AAC in January.
Hey, Paul. Sorry about this.
Yes.
I'm having some network problems here.
Yeah, because I need to get public comment
Well,
like
hang on,
now.
Paul. Hang on.
Yeah.
Sarah, what you have a preference, Sarah?
Well, I mean, this thing has been hanging out there for a long time. So I guess my question is, are there a lot of questions? Is there a big discussion people want to have? Could we take a quick vote, or do we need to, is it going to take a long
Yeah,
time?
the problem is it's 5:37. We got to get public comment, and I don't know what that's going to look like. And we got to get those people before 6 because we lose our interpreters at 6.
I guess the
There you
question is, are there a lot of hands up? Does it look like there's a lot of
go.
conversations to be
Well,
had?
it looks like there's going to be conversation because I already see two hands, more hands, and that's going to take time. And I want to get public comment because that's the priority from the public first.
Okey-doke.
Sarah, I
So,
think it would be good to place this first on the agenda on Metro Access meeting next month. That would give people enough time to be able to reread that and come up with questions if they have them.
all right. So
sounds good.
with that anew, make your spiel about public comment.
Okay, thank you, Chair Summerford. I just want to remind members of the public, we do have several names on the list already. Every member will receive 2 minutes to make their comments. We practice this to make sure that everyone who's attending this meeting gets an opportunity to make their comments. And before we close the meeting, I will share information as far as how people can email and call above with their public comments. Thank you.
All right, and who is the person to speak on the list
So the first
from the
person will
public?
be Timothy Jones, followed by Pamela White. Then we have Dietrice Belt, and then Janice Samuel. And afterwards, if we have time, we may have some members of the AAC.
English North of
right,
Jersey, the so go
Greater
ahead,
San
Timothy.
Sacramento, California.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes, we can.
Okay, sorry about the background noise. My Victor Reader stream was talking. So I just wanted to ask, I was curious when you were talking about the costs being the same for Abilities Ride versus Metro Access vehicles. When we book a trip, are we able to how does it what algorithm, if you mind me asking, is used to determine whether someone gets an Abilities Ride vehicle versus a Metro Access vehicle? Because that's one of the things I'm always wondering when I book 24 hours in advance. And secondly, did I hear correctly that you're looking into finding a way for us to be able to book same day trips? Because wow, wouldn't that be a blessing, especially if we were able to do Abilities Ride for those trips? It could come in very handy if I need to make a emergency run to the grocery store.
Okay, great questions. Real quick, when you book your trips at the end of reservations, we run a lottery that has various parameters, primarily trip distance, pickup location, time of day, and overall number of trips. What percentage of the trips in a day do we want to move? So that's the nutshell of the algorithm. And we change the parameters periodically, sometimes weekly, sometimes daily, depending on the circumstances, to keep some randomness in the process. But no, we never said the same, the cost of an Abilities Ride trip is the same as a Metro Access trip. We're saying there are costs already associated with Metro Access trips that we then, through planning and the use of Abilities Ride, we lower those costs by allowing customers to demonstrate their independence to utilize other services instead of paratransit. And then on the same day, it is a goal. It's always been a goal. And one day we will get there. We're not there quite yet, but one day it should and perhaps will happen.
All righty, thank you so much. Next person anew.
That's Pamela White.
Go ahead, Pamela.
Hello, yes. This is a complaint that I had that I talked about last month that I'm waiting for someone to get back with me. I think it's a technical something to do with a technical issue. If I'm doing a trip on my phone and if I get out for a second, or if I answer a phone call a second, or just happen to get out, I have to go all the way back and put my ID and everything back in before I can start to reserve the trip again. Mr. Blake, you told me that someone would get back with me on that issue, and I still haven't heard heard from anyone on that. I mean, it's not a real bad issue, but it's just like you can't even get out for a second, not even a second. And think you're gonna go back to where you started from. You got to get all the way back, and you got to start all over again.
I thought a member of the team was going to reach out to you. I will follow up directly with that member and ask them. I will see and try to determine what the issue is. I know if I'm in my Robinhood account, for example, and I see my mother's calling and I get out, I kind of have to start the trade all over again. I'm not saying that has to be the way it is with Metro Access, but we do know that in this world where security and things like that take place, there are protocols. We will see and determine what that is. But I will make sure. I don't want to call her out, but we've got a great team of team members, and be sure somebody will reach out to you tomorrow.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, and next person would be Dietrice Belt. And
Okay,
following
yes,
that.
good evening. So last week, probably like Thursday, I had a trip. I'm making sure that I say when they ask, is it an appointed time or whatever. So I said appointed. I had to be at an appointment. They sent me a Metro Access vehicle, a car. They picked up two other people. I was extremely late for my appointed time because they dropped off the other two people. They already tell you, the driver say, we're really not supposed to tell you who's going first, whatever. And they don't know the distance. I don't know what type of map. When you're on Uber, Ubers are better for some people. If the person, if they, I know it's not a guarantee, but when you're asked, when they say, if it's a Metro, the person who give out the Metro rides to the person who needs a Metro Access available for a wheelchair. I'm not wheelchair. I'm not anything. I can do Ubers. Ubers is so good. It's so convenient for the person who really needs a Uber to be on time because you can click when you're ready, and it's not much missing. I don't have any issues with Uber. The cab, when they give me a cab, is always something too. It's like four different cab companies or more. I don't even know. Yellow cab is great. Silver cab, some guy walked into the place I was at. I was so uncomfortable. He walked in, a cab driver of silver. Yellow cab never did that. They will call you, text you, yellow cab, and tell you. Also, with Metro Access, the vehicle, they call you when they're outside. We need a text or a call before, 20 minutes before, not right then and there. I know they'll wait for you, but it's an inconvenience. Especially if I'm stressing Uber requested, because I know my time frame and I'm very like, I know, and I talk with one of the supervisors and everybody's saying a mixed thing. Everybody's not on the same page. It's a lot of mishaps with the dispatchers and the phones will be busy. They have to get somebody to take. Y'all need more people working. It's people out here that need jobs also. They need to have some remote workers, not just in that call center. They in there laughing, playing. I don't know what's going on. The phone will hang up, they'll transfer you to somebody else while you in the mix of your call. It's really a mess. And I'm just newly getting with, and I'm have anxiety. That's another thing. To put me in a vehicle with other people, that's one of my disabilities, is anxiety. I'm in a vehicle with other people, they're getting dropped off first. That heightens things. We're in a close knit. One woman at the front, I'm in the back, we're in a small car. If anything, that day, I'm like, I wish you would have sent the big vehicle. Which I think is a fool when you're sending a big vehicle for one person. Then this time when it was a need for a big vehicle, they sent a car with three of us crammed in a car. And I get dropped off last.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Bell.
Thank you. Next person.
Next person is Janice Samuel, and after Janice, it's Libra Robinson. So Janice, go ahead.
Thank you, Anu. First, I'd like to thank Sarah for her presentation. Sarah, thank you very much. That was very thorough. I think it's a great proposal. My comment was regarding the gentleman who provided the data earlier. I agree that decisions need to be backed by data. They need to be data driven. And he presented his data and he acknowledged it. It was at an excessive speech rate. So it truly was drinking from a fire hose. And so, what I want to know is what is the story that we are to glean from that data? Data can say whatever you wanted to say. And that was one thing I didn't like at work when we would go to the attorneys for opinions and they would ask us, well, what do you want it to be? And it was like, no, that shouldn't be how it is. It's like, so what information are we to take away from that data so that we can make appropriate suggestions and comments? Thank you.
I'm happy to respond if that's appropriate, but if not, I'll leave it up to the chair's discretion.
Go ahead, Ryan. Sure.
I appreciate the comment. I hear where you're coming from. I have a background in econometrics, so believe me when I say I know what you mean when you say that like data can be used to tell a lot of different narratives. Look, we had extremely proficient consultants on the study that approached it from an objective standpoint. We really just wanted to know what was driving the costs. We got that answer. I think that's really what the story is here. You know, the costs are being driven primarily by high ridership caused by the various things that we mentioned, you know, dialysis, adult daycare, and some locally induced metro access coverage. Like all of these are contributing factors. None of them are resulting in, and I understand why it feels like there isn't much of a like narrative thread because we don't have direct answers. This really is the beginning parts where we're like starting a discussion, hearing feedback. If you've got more time to look through the materials and you have thoughts, please share them with us. We'd love to hear it. And we're happy to return to talk more about it in the future. So the narrative theme is costs are high due to X, Y, and Z. We're going to do our best to address X, Y, and Z while still maintaining good service for everyone involved. So I hope that answers your question. But if you've got any follow-ups, please send me an email. I'm happy to talk with you. Okay.
Thank you, Ryan.
Thank you.
And the next person for public comments is Libra Robinson.
All right, thank you and good evening. I had as president of the National Federation of the Blind Greater Washington, D.C. chapter, I go to my membership with a lot of information from this meeting and also give feedback. Now, one of the things that has been coming up a lot is the Uber links. Now, I think I brought this up maybe a year or so ago that the Uber links that are sent, especially for people that use VoiceOver. Now, we have a lot of low vision members. The Uber link is very accessible, but sometimes when you have your VoiceOver, the link is not accessible when you double tap, okay? And then even if you use the rota, sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. Now, a lot of members, including myself now, have been calling Metro Access when we do get those links and ask them, look, we cannot access this link. Could you make the ride for us? And they have been doing this. Now, I have heard, and I haven't heard it from you, Mr. Blake, so I'm just saying what I've heard, and I'd like to get it from the horse's mouth that the policy is going to change where they're not going to do your Uber for you or sell, request it for you. I don't know if that's true or not. But my observation is, how can we make the for people that accept the Uber ride, make that link more accessible to us because we want to be able to utilize it. And we definitely know that VoiceOver is something that we as blind and legally blind people use. So I did come to you about a year or so ago, and you did say that you were going to look into that. And I wanted to know if you did look into that and how, if any, that I can help or anybody in our blind community can help. I'm a technology teacher, and I can't not use that link the majority of the time. Second, I know we only have 2 minutes. Uber policy. I wondered if we could, I love that music, if we could, we negotiate the Uber policy to create a space to make it door-to-door service. Now, I know you told us if you click on that link, Metro Access is not, you know, that is it. They are not required as Uber drivers to do door-to-door. But I wonder if we could renegotiate that and have it set up as it is in Transport DC here in DC, that any Uber or cab that accepts a ride from WMATA is expected to do door-to-door service in that way. And I will say you serve if you have any way of continuing that contract, it
We
is
got other
fantastic. I'm
customers.
sorry. I'm sorry.
So just real quick answer. And thank you, Ms. Robinson. So
Yes,
yeah, the
thank you.
policy is changing. We want the Ubers to be independent. And so what we're saying now is if you're And we're going to be, you'll be hearing more from Uber representatives soon about this, probably as early as next month's meeting. If you're having trouble with the links from us, from an accessibility standpoint, there is an option to accept the trips via the Uber app. So we're going to give customers, because for a long time we stayed away from the app base because I'm a firm believer in the accessibility of SMS. But that's going to be an option. You don't have to spend your own money. And we're even asking Uber to allow customers to download the app and set up an account without even putting a credit card on file. We're still working on some of that with them. That's going to be up to them to decide. At this point, no, we're not going to engage in a contract modification that would make Uber a door-to-door service, because Uber service that is contracted with us is their regular service. But I did announce last month that Lyft will be joining the Abilities Ride program soon. And Lyft, part of their proposal was to provide door-to-door service. So that will be another option for customers. We don't have to make the Abilities Ride one size or one company does everything the same as everybody else. We want to allow the companies to do their business model and allow us the greatest flexibility from a business standpoint, while also giving customers varying options based on their abilities. And Ms. Robinson, as you know, we've been doing all those road supervision activities
Yes,
for
sir.
your various meetings. And every time I send out that list of trips for the road supervisors, they're loaded with Uber trips. So I'm glad you, as well as Ms. Belt, enjoy Ubers. But we're going to continue to make things accessible and more available. But we want to do it, the heart and the message of the Abilities Ride program, which I take all around the country, is that we're taking businesses within their own business models and just ensuring that they have a commitment to accessibility. We don't want to change who they are. We just want them to understand how to serve customers with disabilities.
That is fantastic, sir. And what about the link? Are we going to still, if we cannot click the link, are we going to still be able to call Where's My Ride and get assistance, or is was that a falsehood?
No, well, no, that's going to go away eventually. I mean, we're trying to identify those customers, and we've talked about this in this meeting a couple of months ago. We're not just going to immediately eliminate it, but we're trying to get the customers before it gets to that stage. We want the customers to try to download the Uber app if they have challenges with the links themselves. We need to move away from, because if we send you an Uber link, the idea is that you're independent and you're off and running without having to call back to the call center, because that kind of defeats the
And what I
problem.
like about it going to the app, where if people are able to do it, you'll see it all in one place. If you're able to access the app, I think that'll be a good space instead of digging through many texts and trying to find the links. And it might help some of this accessibility issue. But having that, is there another public customer from the comment that needs to be made from the public, another customer?
Thank you. Thank you, Zach. Thank you.
Chair Simon Ford, this is Anu. We do not have any additional members of the public for public comments. However, we do have three AAC members.
Y'all, for AAC members, we have to keep this under 60 seconds. These interpreters are gone at 6 o'clock, and Nu needs to make her quick 30-minute second spiel.
Okay, so first is Marcy Goldstein. Marcy, go ahead.
Gotta give minute and under because we're done at six. Marcy? All right, Anu, we're going to
Okay,
go ahead.
I had a situation where I wrote a complaint to complaint department with a copy to Christian Blake. I had heard nothing, and they said they would get back to me in 5 days.
All right, so Marcy, what we're going to do is staff is sitting on here. They will email you to get the details to hope. And I know Miss Anderson and her team will thoroughly investigate this and get to the heart of it. And
Christian has the whole complaint.
yes, thank you. Next person, Anu.
I do, yes.
Next person is Vanessa and then Debbie.
All right, Vanessa, 60 minutes or less, we losing our interpreters in 2 minutes.
Okay. Real quick, real quick, I wanted to circle back to the certification, the new applicants regarding their photo. Picture of the photo. What is the best method? Because sometimes I know they
send it in a carbon copy, and it's not a good picture. So what's the best method to send in a picture for the photo and also for recertification? Is there a time where you want a fresher, newer copy? That's one. And then the last is, can we get that link to where we can trace our Ubers? I would like to pass that on to some consumers so they can just inquire about their trips through either Tim or whatever the website is. Can we get that information again, please?
So with the certification, I'm sure Mr. Colbert will work with Anu to get back to you the information that you need, and Mr. Blake will probably get back to you on the last piece so that you get your questions answered. Is that okay? Because I want to get this last person. We only got a minute left.
Sure.
Go ahead.
Debbie.
Who's up?
It's Debbie. Quick question. Are there any taxi cabs that operate in DC that are wheelchair accessible?
DC Yellow Cab do have some wheelchair accessible vehicles that I know of under the Abilities Ride umbrella, if I'm correct, Mr. Blake, right? Not all of them, but there's a
That is
decent amount
correct.
of them.
Yellow cab, yes.
Yes, under Yellow Cab. And with
That's
that,
the
you
only
give me.
one.
Yes,
That's
that's
the
the
only
one
one
that.
we utilize for wheelchair for now. And again, we'll save it for next month. There's a reason why we do not cannibalize the wheelchair accessible fleet, particularly in DC, when we have a whole fleet of wheelchair accessible vehicles ourselves. But we're still doing hundreds of wheelchair trips each day free of charge through the Abilities Ride program.
So I'm
Thank you.
also asking for paying public, not through WMATA, just
Gotcha. Yeah. So
public.
that
All right.
that's a question better for the Department of For Hire Vehicles. They have explicit data on their fleet of publicly
Hey.
available taxis.
All
Okay.
right. Well,
Thank you.
thank you. Anu, give your spiel and we're done.
Sure. So, any members of the public, if you like to email, you can send an email to metroaacchair@wmata.com or call and leave a message at 202-962-1100. Thank you.
Thank you. And thinking about nominations for subcommittees, chairs, first vice chairs, and second chairs, think about that as we send those in by email. Like I said, I'm looking to train people. You can talk to me privately. We can start training this year. Current people and people that are interested. Because my goal is to, and I'm sure the other subcommittee is to do order of succession and train new people. Because I'm getting off in a couple of years. With that, let us all those in vote, motion to adjourn, please do so by saying aye.
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 Nays, abstentions, we are adjourned. And Sarah, we're going to continue our conversation at next month's subcommittee level with your proposal, okay?
All righty.
Sarah, it was a
Thank you.
great presentation. I
Well,
hope
it's a great
every
idea. I can't swear to the presentation.